Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today of Women Leading the Way, and with me, we have a phenomenal leading lady today who I'm excited to introduce, but our topic today is on what is neurodiversity. I don't know about you guys, but that is a pretty big word, and it's a hot word today. And our leading lady is Tiffany Jamison, and she is the managing partner of Grit and Flow. So, Tiffany, say hello to all of our listeners.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for having me on board.
Hello, you can't see them, but they're there. It's pretty awesome. I want to thank you for being on our show today, and we're talking about a big topic. And before we get to that, I know I've told you this 1,000 times, but I love your business name of Grit and Flow. And I just want you to share a little bit with our listeners. It's like, what is the intention and meaning behind Grit and Flow? Because it is an awesome business name.
Yeah, it's catchy. I get a lot of questions on that one. So grit is your perseverance, your ability to stick with something. And my whole start of this business was from my son, Jake, who's got autism, and watching him have, 10 to 15 hours of therapy after a day of school, and his perseverance to get through it and to be a junior in high school right now, just doing amazing things. It really shows the grit that the population with autism and neurodiversity, I'll talk about, they have to put into their life to be successful. Flow is a positive psychology. When you get doing what you want to do, you get into your what they call your optimal experience, your flow. And so I know individuals with autism and individuals in general, when we find what we love to do, it's not work. So with Grit and Flow, the idea is to help people find that thing that they can use these skills, this perseverance they've had, and that ability to really see things through, to find a flow and to be contributing members to society. So I want everybody to find their grit and flow.
Wow. I think that's super cool. I mean, that is purpose and reason, for what we do, which we were talking about, before the show started. So pretty cool, pretty cool. I know we're going to try to unpack this really big word called neurodiversity. It sounds very sciencey and very smarty and all of that. But, just for like the high level and understanding of what is neurodiversity, if you can share.
Yeah, a little background on why we have neurodiversity now. So we all talk about disability. Somebody with autism has a disability. Somebody with ADHD has a disability. It's always a very negative context. So it came around that we don't want to be negative. It's not. A lot of people see their traits that are associated with their autism or their ADHD are not deficits, they're not disorders, and they're not impairments. They're who they are. So the word neurodiversity came up because its approach to learning disability that argues that diverse neurological conditions are a result of normal variations in the human brain and that they shouldn't be seen as a deficit, but more of the ability to bring different human brains together with a different perspective on things to create even better innovation and knowledge. So neuro is the way you think, and diversity is thinking differently. So this is people bringing different brains forward.
Wow. So, there's so much talk now, not talk, but it's like we see it with companies that have diversity and inclusion initiatives. And, for all of our listeners, if you haven't heard, about diversity and inclusion, some are even saying just from the HR standpoint that we just need to remove the word diversity and just call it an inclusive workplace. So, Tiffany, can you kind of touch on how does neurodiversity work work in the workplace, right? That's kind of like where we want to look at this.
Right. So the whole, what they call D&I, or diversity and inclusion efforts, or sometimes they're calling them now diversity and belonging is also another way it's referred to. So, you know, diversity efforts really right now are missing the boat on the whole neurodiversity issue. And it's a little frustrating for someone in my perspective of it, because a lot of money is going into these big efforts after the Me Too movement and, you know, trying to bring more women in, which are great, trying to do the pay gap, but they're really missing the point on the people that are coming in that are not necessarily thinking the same. The important thing to realize about neurodiversity is it's invisible. So a lot of the diversity efforts focus on visible disabilities or visible differences. So, you know, black, white, your religion you may have through, you know, the way you dress, you woman, man, whatever you decide to identify from, you know, those things you can see. But when you're adding neurodiversity into your diversity plan, it's people aren't saying, hey, I'm neurodiverse. Hey, I have autism. Hey, I have ADHD. You're not getting that kind of disclosure with it. So it makes it very difficult for companies to try to embrace this, because if people aren't telling you that they're part of a group, or then you really can't help them, because you really can't ask when, you know, it comes to the different laws. So that's where awareness comes into play for the diversity inclusion. People with neurodiversity need to embrace it. So it's part of them being able to talk about what kinds of needs and accommodations they may have in the workplace, but without putting it in a negative portion. So, you know, if you need to have wiggle room or a wiggle chair, that's one thing. A lot of people sometimes with autism, they can't sit still, or ADHD, and if they have this little like soft bounce on, they can sit there and focus for hours. So is that really a big deal in the organization to provide that? It's not. It's cheap. It's like $50. So, but to communicate those things is the hard part. So adding the neurodiversity into diversity really is just something that has to be consciously done. And it has to be in a way where everybody in the organization can access the benefits of that, since you can't ask and it is invisible. Does that make sense?
It does, but I have a question. So coming from corporate, you know, we all come from, you know, a corporate career somewhere, right? Work background.
Right.
How would a company even begin to look at the kind of like not visible signs of being inclusive, right? I mean, I guess that's where I'm trying to say, how would a company even implement a policy that way? I mean, is it the individual that needs to bring it up? Does a company need to put the kind of like party line message out that tell us what you need? But, you know, it's the hiring part that becomes the you don't see it. So I don't know, maybe you have a better idea. Like, how can companies really, you know, kind of work with this diverse workforce?
It's challenging. It is very challenging. But really it starts with educating the culture and the company. So a lot of the initiatives need to start from the top. They need to say, we want to make a conscious effort of having a truly inclusive environment where everybody, not just people with some kind of label, can come in and bring their best selves forward. So by creating the cultures and climates that are open to this, people start talking and they start looking at job design differently. And that's the first part. The second part is you need to publicize it. It is a publicity saying, we are a neurodiverse friendly company. And you'd be surprised how many people will jump at a company, promote a company that is neurodiverse. So that's a huge thing. So it is a little bit of marketing, but the marketing really needs to be followed up with the implementation. But once again, it needs to start at the top saying, these are the things we're going to do to promote an inclusive culture. This is the education we're going to provide. This is the supports we're going to provide to our team so they can do it. And then opening up the discussion, almost an open-ended questions during interviews. I am working, trying to define a way where we can look at job designs and say, you know, this is what the job needs versus, like, for example, people with autism, communication, interaction is very challenging. You may have the smartest person, hardest worker, but they can't have a two-way conversation probably without offending you in some way or without feeling uncomfortable or even speaking. So how do you open that up? So, you know, if we can look at our jobs and design our jobs that don't require the social communication, and we don't make that social communication a requirement that is assessed in the performance reviews of their jobs. So that's one thing. Interviewing is a huge barrier for this group. A lot of interviewing, they call it, I think someone quoted in this paper, right? I was reading about death, taxes, and interviews for people with autism. So it's just really challenging for them. So a lot of things that have come up are to have where resumes come in and, you know, we don't get to see the person, and this helps for all diversity. They're kind of no-name resumes. There's also doing phone interviews or other things where the eye contact or some of the social uncomfortableness won't come across as much. And it's just different ways of really assessing talent and knowing that social part isn't necessarily as important in all jobs, and that, you know, if you also panel interview, it's really good.
Yeah, here's a question. I mean, is neurodiversity only for, and again, this is a new term for even me. I mean, I've heard of diversity and inclusion. I know companies that, you know, have like employee resource groups and, you know, small focus groups that they use internally in their companies for women's advancement, for, you know, minority advancement and that kind of thing. And I'm curious, it's like, is this a term that is new to companies? Because it's one I haven't heard, and I might be behind the times. I mean, are companies and HR folks aware of neurodiversity, or is it kind of a new trending term?
I think it would be a new trending term, probably in the last year or two. And then once again, it's the whole putting a positive approach to it. People are tired of being told that they're broken, you know, that the way they think or the way they do things. It's that kind of social justice of saying, you know what, I'm not broken. And I think I can give a good example of, I have a son, we're looking at colleges, who's a junior, and we were looking at some of the disability services, and I found some places that, you know, do housing, especially for people with autism. And he looked at me and he goes, Mom, this isn't for me. This is, I don't fit into any of this. And he does not see himself as having a disability. He sees himself as, this is how I am. I don't care if people don't like me. I don't care. So that's kind of where it's come about, is it was just such a negative stereotype where, you know, people with ADHD or dyslexia, you know, they're not stupid. And that's the part, is people have these stigmas, stigmas of people that have any of these labels, that they're not smart, that, you know, they're crazy or they're irresponsible, or, and that's hard when you have those stigmas and you're trying to get a job. So how do you communicate?
So are there any companies that are actually doing this right now that are really having more of these integrated hiring practices for diversity and inclusion? I mean, you know, we've heard all those stories about the opera, you know, or symphonies, you know, I'm going back to some stories where they put like a screen up and whether it's a woman or a man based on gender, you know, kind of bias, and they, you know, listen to the song and how they play as opposed to who the person is. Are there companies that are actually doing this now that you can, you know, share maybe what they're doing internally that really is making this an initiative that's working?
You know, most of the programs that are working really well are either in two different areas. First, there's these huge efforts by like SAP, Microsoft, DXC Technology, that are doing this autism at work, or it's called the Dandelion Project. And what they do is they have a different way of interviewing. So people come in with autism, it's focused on autism, these ones, into a room, and there's these Lego Mindstorm creations, which are these robotics. And they sit around in a group on a table, and they are kind of being watched about how they build, how they troubleshoot, how they interact with other people. And if they kind of pass this special assessment, they get asked to do a 6-week, they get hired, and they get training for 6 weeks on job skills. So all the soft skills you need and how to accomplish that. And then they get put to work in these companies, usually as some kind of software engineer or quality engineer. So that's kind of one thing that's going on, which has it's doing a good job about bringing awareness to the topic. But the trouble that I'm seeing, and even these companies are seeing, is it's an expensive effort. I mean, not many companies, you know, that aren't this large can afford to train 6 weeks of people with specialty training. So there really is the challenge is how do we make this scalable? How do we make it so, you know, I call it the mid-sized companies, the 50 to 1,000, can hire people without having these big efforts. So it is a problem. There's not a lot of
But I would imagine.
And if they are doing
I was going to say, isn't it also probably true that it's like if the companies are doing this, I would imagine there are some statistics to show the loyalty, the performance of some of these individuals of just how incredible when inspired in the right way, right, that they are just an amazing workforce that hasn't even been tapped with their talent. Am I right?
And there are a ton of wonderful stories. And a lot of the organizations, like here in Orange County, we have, everywhere, you really have Department of Rehabilitation. They work with Easter Seals and they work with Goodwill. And people come in, they get qualified for services and they help job coach them, place them, and put them into jobs. But that only lasts like 90 days. So you get to the point where, and it's usually, there's kind of different. Here's the catch with neurodiversity and autism in general. It is a spectrum. So you'll get people who are very impacted where, you know, their daily living skills are an issue. Then you get people who are living independently and their biggest issue is they just don't connect with people. So they're losing jobs because of that. So you got to think about how do companies go about addressing this big spectrum of helping people out. So you'll find that support systems like Goodwill of Orange County and Easter Seals, they're helping people out, but they're usually, I'm going to say, a lower functioning in the sense of they don't have college degrees. So, but they're getting jobs and they're contributing to society. The thing that any person gets from working is huge. The self-satisfaction, the pride. So they're getting that. And they're starting to get more independent and less dependent on Social Security, income, things like that. So that's what a lot of companies are able to do on a smaller scale, but they're taking one person. And I almost call it the token person. Like one client I worked with, we had so-and-so, that's our person. Well, it needs to get bigger, and it needs to be less of an effort of just taking one person here, one person there, but being part of the overall culture so they can take any type of job. But once again, you get to that whole spectrum. So the population that I'm really focusing right now are the ones that are going into more of the white collar because I'm kind of going to assume that if they can get through college, there's a certain amount of functionality that they're able to portray in the workplace. And
right.
So it gets really into that invisible disability. So here's another catch with this group. There is, I don't remember the statistic, but it's something like 60 to 70% of them have a comorbid diagnosis, meaning that they just don't have ADHD. They don't just have autism. Some of them have cerebral palsy. Some of them have speech and language delays. Some of them have a lot of people with autism have anxiety and depression on top of everything else. So that's the trouble. It's not simple. It's an extremely complex issue. I mean, so the people themselves, and I call it the challenges, barriers, and enablers. So the challenges they'll have are those challenges that come along with their disorders that they have to overcome. And then you get to the company and you have the barriers, which is the interview process or not being able to get assessments or people judging, people thinking you're stupid or not giving you an opportunity to advance, which is a huge issue. You know, we got you a job. Aren't you happy just to have a job? And it's like, no, I want a career. I want to advance. I want to be, you know, on my own, there's no reason that I shouldn't be. You just need to, like, look at it a little bit different. So, I mean, it's just, it's so complex.
Well, it is, and I want to back up just a little bit because, you know, I know this is kind of, this is where I love what you're saying, first of all. I think this is something that people don't know enough about, right? It's just, this is like almost like an untapped workforce of talent that we don't even know about.
That's exactly what they call it.
Right. We don't even like help them be successful, which is, I think, is what your message is. But with Grit and Flow, tell me, you know, for like kind of this year, it's like, what is your focus right now? I know you're going, oh my gosh, for your PhD in organizational psychology, you little smarty pants you, which is pretty awesome. But what is, like, for this year, like, what would you like to see happen, knowing that we've got listeners that are hearing, you know, for you, like, how is it that you are changing this, right? Are you talking to one company at a time? Is Grit and Flow about speaking to be able to move the needle forward on behalf of kind of the untapped workforce with individuals with autism? Or talk to me a little bit about what you're trying to do just from a this year, 2019 standpoint.
2019. So our vision this year for Grit and Flow is education. I don't think anybody knows what to do. And so by educating people, and like next Monday night, I'll be having a 2-hour free seminar at the Holiday Inn by the Orange County Airport. And it's just, what does autism look like in the workplace? And I just want to start people thinking about, you know, what accommodations are like $50, you know, or, you know, what does it really look like, and how hard is it within the organization? So that's the first thing. So I'm willing to go out to any organization and speak about what neurodiversity is or what autism is in the workplace to educate. And then the next thing we'd like to do this year is to start to go into companies and do kind of a feasibility study on their culture and say, you know, you're ready to take on some people in these different areas, or you're not ready to take on. And if you really want to take these initiatives, these are some things you need to do. So kind of that feasibility of what, you know, what needs to be to do this. The benefit of Grit and Flow is we're not just very narrow focused. For example, I have a degree in, I was a product manager and a programmer before, and I have an MBA in accounting and finance and e-business strategy. So when we go into a workplace, we're not very closed-minded. We're very open-minded about the entire organization. So we can look at, you know, it from a business perspective and the value proposition of it, but we can also look at it from a social justice or corporate social responsibility angle. And we can provide the marketing that may be needed for one to bring the pipeline to the employer of the people with, you know, these neurodiversity that want to work and that are great employees. And also promote the company itself. And so that brings other people, because like the millennials right now, they really like to be a part of something. They want their the company they're working for, they're willing to give away give up salary to work for a company that looks for a purpose they believe in. So by helping the company kind of align all that up with their corporate strategy, and kind of get ready to implement and maybe start small on the actual implementation, but to line all that other stuff up is kind of what we want to start doing in 2019. But once again, it's cool. Starting off the education and going in, and unconscious bias is another big one. Going out, and that's for
huge.
All diversity initiatives. So talking to the people, and I went through this certification at Cornell for diversity and inclusion, and the individuals that were on this were from all over the world. And the perspectives from, you know, the African-American man or the African-American female or the different religions coming into it and then looking at the neurodiversity, we all go around life right now, and it's sad. And being who you are, like I'm a white, half-Hispanic female, really nerdy, you know, that's the elephant in the room is to say that I'm white, but that shouldn't be. We're afraid to talk about what we are. So, Michelle, when you come to work and when you come to CWI events, you're bringing your whole self. So we're bringing everything that's happened to us in our 40-something, we won't talk about years, that we're bringing into this. I'm bringing the fact that I've raised a child with autism. I'm bringing the fact that I've gone to school. I'm bringing the fact that I've had, you know, a great family life, a great marriage, you know, that I'm hungry for knowledge and that I'm very compassionate. I'm bringing all that with me. You're bringing whatever you are with you, and we need to embrace that. And that's kind of what the unconscious bias starts doing, is you don't realize, like, you stereotype so much. I mean, I catch myself all the time, and I'm embarrassed sometimes. Like, wow, I'm jumping to conclusions about the way that person drives, or because they drive that kind of car, you know, or something else. And just bringing those to your awareness is a huge step for any person in any company, and that's where it needs to start, is to realize that we're looking at everything as their big white elephants in the room, and we need to be able to talk about them and be comfortable talking about our differences.
Wow. I think that, I mean, that's a big goal. Do you, I mean, Tiffany, do you find that there are diversity and inclusion associations to be a part of, or is it mostly the HR groups where you go? I mean, is it going in through human resources that you usually find is an open door for you, for opportunity to kind of get your message through, or where is that?
I am working with HR groups to kind of bring the awareness in, but to be honest, it starts with somebody who has a relationship with somebody with autism. So it's going to be, I have a neighbor with autism. That's really where all these efforts start. You'll find out, like, Microsoft has taken this huge initiative. They are doing amazing things, and their CEO has a son with a disability. Those are the people that are going to make the changes. Those are the ones that are going to lead the efforts and champion in an organization. So by being a part of the different organizations in the community, like I'm on a bunch of transition task force that help with transitioning people from high school to college to career, and working with those different organizations, I think that's really where we're going to kind of get in. Because we've all been touched in some way. We really have. I mean, you could probably talk about 5 people you know that have autism or ADHD, and you can see how impactful it is on your life. It changes everything. And I know I'm a better person for having a son with autism. I really am. I'm sad he's had to struggle so much, but he has become such an amazing person, and his viewpoint on life is refreshing.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what he's going to do. And that's my passion, is to make me do this, is because, wow, I'm not going to let this world stop him from being the amazing man he's going to be. And I don't want it to stop anybody else.
I think that's a really cool ask out there. It's like, and we have so many, I mean, you know, we've got the Women Tribe, we've got Women Listeners, it's like Women Have Kids. I mean, I can put on 2 hands at least, you know, thinking of about 20 women I know that either have kids or know of children with autism, and it's rising, which is a sad statistic, but, you know, you're definitely doing good. I know we only got a second left. If we've got listeners who want to reach out to you and say, hey, Tiffany, I want to know more about Grit and Flow, or they embrace your initiative, which I assume are many people, how do you want people to reach you?
The best way is Tiffany, T-I-F-F-A-N-Y, at Grit and Flow, spelled out G-R-I-T. A-N-T, I'm sorry, spelled that wrong, GRITANDFLOW.com, grittenflow.com, or you can reach me on my website. If you want to come out to my event next week, I would love to have you. It's free, and you can just learn more about it, and we get the chance to chat then too. But I'm always open to any discussion. It's a topic that's I'm very passionate about, and we can scale it
in very needed
to fit your organization.
Yeah, and very needed. Yeah. It is. It's like, you know, and sometimes it's like we just don't know. You know, I mean, I had no idea that, you know, when you said the whole thing about, you know, disability, but the invisible, right? The invisible, and it's about abilities. And, you know, we're not tapping into that. That's huge. So I get it. You're on a great path. Here's my final question to you, girl, because we're at the end, and I ask this. It's like, you know, blow our minds with something you want to leave us with that is, like, positive, upbeat, inspirational, something that's going to put this whole radio show in a nice, tidy package of inspiration. What do you got for us? How are you going to leave us?
Oh, boy. That's a big one.
I know, no pressure.
It's not hard. It just takes compassion and a little bit of effort, and you can do it. You guys could be a part of the solution. Everybody here, listening, you're part of the solution. Doesn't take much.
I love that. Be part of the solution. Tiffany, thank you so much for being our leading lady
Thanks
today.
For having
you are
me.
On quite a mission. Absolutely. And, you know, thank you to our listeners. I think all of you know by now we're here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. We have got some fabulous Women Lead Radio shows scheduled for the future. So on that, it's a Monday. I hope all of you have a great week. And please, my challenge to all of you is to ask what you're doing to support other women in business. Have a great week.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.